Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the IAAF Inside Athletics Podcast. I'm Ben Harlow and I'm joined by two lovely co-hosts today, Michelle Samet.
Hi.
And Tom Burton.
Hello, it is Thomas, but you know, Tom's fine. Carry on.
Is Thomas your professional name?
Yes, it's my byline name. Anyway, sorry, I will be less of a crank for the next hour, sorry.
So we are actually recording in Berlin on the final day of the European Athletics Championships, but today we've got a whole host of topics that we're going to talk about. There's been some amazing Diamond Leagues in Monaco and London. There's also been the African Championships, and there's also obviously the European Championships. So we've got a jam-packed episode for you. And along with that, we've also got a decathlon interview with Nicholas Kau, who ended up coming fourth in the men's decathlon here in Berlin. But he was actually the World Under 20 champion back in Bydgoszcz 2 years ago. And Tom, you did that interview with him, didn't you?
I did, yeah. And not just the World Under 20 champion in Bydgoszcz, but also the World Under 18 champion in Cali in 2015, when the decathlon was competed at that championships for the first ever time. It used to be an octathlon. And I think he's got the championship record in both. Well, of course, just before we go any further, he is German as well, so he got silver at the World Youths as well in the javelin. Obviously, because all Germans are born to throw javelin, it seems.
What is this, back in Cali?
In Cali in 2015, yeah. He's a very talented young man.
But more from him, I think, we've got later on. Yeah. I don't really want to spoil too much because I don't know what you talked about.
Oh, everything. We talked shop, to use Ben's favourite term. But yes, no, Nicholas is a lad I know well because I was lucky enough to see him train alongside Ashton Eaton in 2016 because he was one of the lucky young athletes to be invited on camp to go on that training camp in Portland before the World Indoors a couple of years ago. And I know that has had a big influence on his career, and it's something that he talks about in our interview. So yeah, that's certainly something to listen out for later on.
Okay, so we're here in Berlin. Let's talk about the European Championships. It's been pretty epic, it's fair to say.
I mean, we've still got one more session to go, and I'm already saying it's been emotional. I think the last few nights, I couldn't go to sleep very early just because you're just so high on adrenaline. And if you'd asked me to pick favourites, and I know you probably will, Ben, it's going to be a really tough ask.
Yeah, being German yourself in this amazing stadium. I've never been to this Berlin stadium before, but my God, like, it is as good as everybody says it is.
And there were 60,000 people in last night, which I think was a record for a European Championships.
It was.
The atmosphere, every night has been pretty incredible, I have to say, but last night, when the old place was absolutely rocking. And it's a stadium steeped in history, and it's a checkered history, it's a mixed history, but to see it in its best light, I think 2009 is kind of considered to be a high point for World Championships, and I think this time round we're really talking about one of the great European Championships of all time.
Mm-hmm. And that's basically what you hear from everyone. You mentioned the stadium. I was here on Sunday. They had an under 20 international match just as a test event here, and right after that was the official training session in the stadium, and a lot of the athletes that were competing here entered the stadium. And everyone's reaction, whether they had competed in 2009 or whether it was the first time, just went, wow. Mm-hmm. That was the overall reaction. And I think it's the same for spectators. It's the same for journalists. I've been there. We had our national junior championships in 2008 as a test event there. I was here in 2009 as a spectator for the World Championships. I've been here for the ISTAF a couple of years ago, which is always a very good crowd. But I've genuinely never seen anything like what we are seeing this week since 2009.
Yeah, it is really quite amazing. And I think generally, as well as the stadium being great, the German crowd is very knowledgeable about athletics. And you can see, like, I was talking to some people afterwards, and they were saying how the crowd just literally gets behind everybody. It doesn't matter where you're from, who you are, what event you're doing, they're literally cheering everybody. I think that is one of the nicest things about our sport generally.
And the nice thing about it as well, when you say crowd getting behind people, they physically do as well, because even in the morning sessions when the stadium wasn't sold out, what the organisers have been doing is allowing people to move around in their seats. So especially with the multi-events, for example, the crowd has been following the athletes, and it's so exciting to see when you have stuff like that, because it's just support for the fans. I mean, for the athletes, because Tom, you were watching the women's heptathlon just in the stands, just enjoying the sunshine.
Yeah.
And the competition.
Yeah, totally. It's been a feature, hasn't it? I mean, to an extent, it is a feature of championships that the multi-event competitions kind of drag on in between sessions. But what's really defined this championship for me is, yeah, the heptathlon high jump. There was probably 15,000 people in the stadium still who'd all kind of gathered around that bank where the high jump was taking place, just watching heptathlon high jump. It was a real, yeah, something special to kind of be a part of.
So, all that aside, I am going to ask you about your highlights of the champ so far. Michelle, you've got your head in your hands already. But I'm going to make you pick. If you can do three for me, if you go three of your highlights so far.
So we've talked about the decathlon briefly because we mentioned Nicholas Cowell. And when I saw last week that he'd been added to the field last minute because he actually wasn't part of the team and then found out that Kai Kaczmarek had pulled out, then he got the call up. He finished in fourth. Super young, and of course the big thing here for us Germans was the fact that Arthur Abele came back and won the title. And Arthur Abele, one of the nicest guys you could possibly imagine, he's been around for absolute ages. He set some of his personal best way back in 2007.
Wow.
Out of the last 12 seasons, he's been injured for 6 of them. He's had all injuries you could possibly imagine. He's tore his Achilles, he had a the list goes on and on. And for him to come out in front of a home crowd to really perform, like, he's had some absolutely amazing performances. That was one of the most emotional things for me of this championships, because you could see how much it meant for him. He was crying like a baby after that 1500. Mm-hmm. And it's when you see a grown man cry, that really touches you. Exactly. And the same on the podium for the medal ceremony as well. And that just for me was absolutely by far one of the highlights of these championships.
Yeah, when they put the crown on his head, it was like the moment in Berlin. It was iconic. And like, obviously a word on Kevin Mayer, because when he fouled out in the long jump, it was madness really, because they were dropping like flies left, right and centre, and then everybody was like, oh, I don't really know what's going to happen now.
Well, it was interesting because I, commentating on these championships for the European Athletic Stream, I made the big mistake of actually giving almost something away that wasn't shown on TV yet, and we were calling some of the heats. I think it was the women's 800 or something, but I was looking at the long jump because I'd seen he had 2 fouls, and then I saw the red flag go up, and all I did was as one of the races went on, and then I thought, I can't say anything because I know they're going to show the images soon. Mm-hmm. But I was just in utter shock because it just left everything really wide open.
But one upside, I'm sorry Kevin if you're listening, but one upside of that that little whoopsie he had in the long jump is that he will be competing in talents at the Decastar in a couple of weeks. And having been there myself, if you're lucky enough to live in the south of France, anywhere near Bordeaux, get yourself down to the Decastar. It's kind of the late season Goethes, and yeah, you can get a crepe, you can watch multi-event competition. It's an absolutely beautiful city to stay in as well. So yeah, he'll be competing, presumably chasing a qualification mark for Doha next year.
Maybe he hasn't got one, has he?
Yeah, yeah.
As the defending champion, though, I think he's got a wild card.
Well, there you go. Well, in which case, I've seen a quote from him saying that he wants to show what he can do on the track in front of a home crowd. He should really deliver in talent. So yeah.
Do I need to go on with my other favourites, or does any of you want to continue?
Tom, let's go to you.
Well, yeah, I'll counter with the heptathlon. Obviously, Nafi Tiam, the Olympic champion, the world champion, coming out on top on that one, but it was just a great battle between her and KJT, wasn't it? It was a
bit of Scouse pride coming through here.
A little bit, yeah. as a Liverpool Harriers fan, I did appreciate Katarina Johnson-Tom's upturn in form. She's had a really quite impressive season that kind of stretches right back to March, really, when she took that world indoor crown. But she came up against Tiam this week, and it was, you know, Tiam's a force of nature. I think, although she was maybe a little bit short of her best across the 7 events, Tiam proved why she's a champion. Every time Johnson Thompson did something, I'm thinking about in the long jump, she had a great javelin round as well. Tiam was just able to respond and, you know, just squeeze the maximum amount of points as possible from it. But, you know, it was the closest finish in a heptathlon that Tiam's won.
Since she won the Olympic title, this is the closest she's been.
Since the Olympic title. So, I mean, it's exciting for Wales next year, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And do you know what? I think for me, it was like you could visibly see KJT, like her mentality had changed for this championships completely. Like she wasn't going in fearing Tiam anymore. She was like, I can take her. And I think with that mentality now, taking that forward to Doha, we're set for an amazing competition.
And I think as well, I mean, to see Tiam's reaction on the podium yesterday, she was slightly emotional getting on the podium. And I know sometimes we can hang medals around athletes' neck before competition even begins. And I imagine a lot of people just expected her to come through and win that gold. But the style which she did it in was just really, really impressive. And I think her reaction afterwards does show that she was in a bit of a dogfight there, but still prevailed.
I mean,
great competition.
Throw nearly 58 metres in the javelin. You deserve to win the head tackle just for that alone. Jeez, that was incredible. But yeah, I think for me, multi-events aside, one of my highlights so far has actually been the men's high jump last night. The atmosphere in that stadium was like nothing I had experienced in before. I think at one point, the Germans were in the lead in the women's discus, the women's long jump, and the men's high jump. Michelle, you're bursting.
It was incredible because the sound was just absolutely insane. I mean, because the long jump, just the leads the lead wasn't changing because Bihambo just went out and had a stormer right from the start.
Mm-hmm.
But because behind her it was so close, the discus, everyone was expecting Perkovic to win, and suddenly we had three Germans taking 1, 2, 3. And then Spielko in the high jump, what you just mentioned, had a completely clean sheet right up until 2:35. And we haven't had good male high jumpers in quite some time. So it's just overwhelming.
I think he's one of my favourite athletes about at the moment, just because I remember when he got his bronze medal at the World Indoors back in March, and he was so incredibly humble for like to have gotten that medal and to be considered one of the world's best high jumpers. And I think he's really kind of taken that honour in his stride to now prove to, he's proved to himself that he can compete with the best on this international stage.
And he was super emotional yesterday. I think when after it was the 2:31 clearance or something, he was looking up and he couldn't believe what he was doing there. And he kept looking up and thinking, oh my God, oh my God. And he kept jumping. And then at the end, I think it was at 2:38, he had one attempt and then just retired. Because when you know you've won, the adrenaline at some point will fade.
Yeah.
And you've just got 60,000 people shouting at you. I think that's just fair enough. Like, call it a day.
Yeah. I agree. So,
just to say, it's good to see Gianmarco Tamberi as well. He just short of the podium last night, but after that, that ankle injury he had in 2016 after clearing 2:39 in Monaco. Good to see him confident, and he's such a performer.
Yeah,
I think we'd all like to see him reach the heights that he was reaching a couple of years ago.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
I mean, when he was introduced to the crowd, he basically almost did a lap of honour. This is like literally at the start. It's like revving up the crowd, waving his arms around.
But the crowd love him as well. Yeah. As you said, it was a German crowd, but actually they don't care because he's just such a great performer.
Yeah, he's a great guy to have around. And hopefully, come Doha 2019, he'll be firing on all cylinders again. So yeah, other highlights, Michelle, talk to me.
Well, we were talking about one Belgian, Nafi Tiam. A host of Belgians, the Borlays, got to be one of my other highlights. First of all, Kevin and Jonathan in the 400 metres, they've been running incredibly well through the heats. They've both struggled with injuries over the years. They started out really mediocre. They had to delay their season starts. Even Dylan looked good in the heats and then just missed out in the semi-finals for the finals. We nearly had three Borlays in the final. And then for them both to come through, Matt Hudson-Smith was way up.
Yeah,
he was insane.
Level.
He looked incredible in the semis and then couldn't quite live up to it. But it's hard in a final.
Yeah.
But for Kevin and Jonathan to come through and get that silver and bronze, I was jumping up and down. And I've got the Belgian radio and Belgian TV behind me. They were throwing papers around. I've never seen anything like it. That was only the one night. Then, of course, it was the 4x4 qualifying where they rested them because they still had the final to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then last night we had the 4x4 finals and they go out and win the bloody thing. So it was, for me, in that race actually, Kevin looked great at the end, but who really won it for them was young Jonathan Sakur, who of course won the World Under 20 title a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And he just he made up ground on Hudson Smith, who looked insane. So for a youngster like him to do that, I've just never seen anything like it.
They actually ran Sakor and Matt Hudson Smith. They ran identical relay splits, apparently, as well. So yeah, what a performance from the under 20 world champion.
Well, there's a reason they call it 4x4.
I think also as well, I mean, I couldn't believe, I love Bruno Hortelano, and when he got handed the baton in the lead, I was like, wow, this has got to be Spain's, because he ran that crazy time, but I think he just went out so fast, because you saw those last 50 metres,
he was going backwards.
He was running through treacle, literally, and I did feel really bad for him, but like, what a race, and what a way to... Well, which actually didn't end the session, but yeah, it was still added to a fantastic session generally. So, Tom, any more highlights from you?
Very dramatic finish to that 4x4, and I think the dramatic finish in the men's 110 hurdles as well. Mm-hmm. I think both Shebenkov and Pascal Martin Lagarde, given the same time, 13:17, split by something like 0.03 of a second. And I think with that race as well, it goes to show that in the championships, it's not all about running the fast time, because Shebenkov has had a really good season for times. He's not some good wins as well in the process. He's got very, very close to the European record. But when it comes to the championships, you've got to keep your cool. In an event like the hurdles as well, it's really, really tough. But if you watch the race again, it's one of those where Martino Lagarde takes a little bit of a lead from the blocks. Then Shebenkov kind of comes through with the last hurdle to clear. And then somehow the Frenchman just... an incredible dip to get it. An incredible dip.
I've looked at that picture about 500 times now, because people keep sending it to me. I can't tell them apart. I would have just given both of them the gold, to be honest. Like, there's no way to tell this apart. I don't know how they did it.
It was crazy. I mean, if you'd have told me before this championship Shebenkov was going to get silver, I would not have believed you. The fact that Pascal did manage to do it... And his reaction as well was pretty special. Here again, another crier.
I love a good cry. I just think it just shows how much it means to these guys and girls.
As well as that, I think there's been some... I think Europeans generally receives a lot of flack for having below par sprinting. But wow, like, this chance for sprinting in general has been pretty amazing. And I want to kick that off with Dina Asher-Smith, because... two world leads in the 100 metres, 10:85, which is the national record, and then 21:89 in the 200 metres. That would have won Worlds last year. Would have won a whole host of World Olympic titles. It's crazy from a 22-year-old.
And it kind of contradicts the point that I just made about the hurdles, that in championships it's not always about the time. For, as you say, a young woman who was heavily touted back in the UK press, I have to say, to come out and perform so well in the final, you know, with the pressure of having the world champion 200 metre runner running inside her. I think it's just, it shows the presence of mind that Dina Asher-Smith has really got. And obviously, what she goes on to do in her career remains to be seen, but this could well be a defining championship.
But also, like you just mentioned, having Daphne on the inside of her. Did you see how much ground she was making up in the first 5, 10, 20 metres of that 200? She was away. There was no way anyone would have caught her.
No.
It was absolutely insane.
At least with Daphne, though, we can say that she's not really excelled to the same levels that she's kind of set herself since she won that world title in 2015 this season. But she came away with the season's best, and she finished like a train.
Yeah.
You know, she maybe not quite closing the gap to Asher-Smith, because...
but maintaining, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think there's a sign there that Skippers is getting back to her best. So
she ran 22:04, though, which also would have won London last year again anyway. So yeah, she actually ran faster than she did when she won the world title last year. So, yeah. Like, to be fair to Skippers, you've got to give it to her. She knows how to win championship medals.
Definitely. Right, do I have to pick my third one?
Yeah, third and final one.
Baby Ingebrigtsen. No doubt. I mean, this guy, Jakob Ingebrigtsen, he was trending on Twitter yesterday, like in various countries. 17-year-old boy wins two titles at European Championships. There was a hilarious tweet of a guy who was saying, look, I'm that age and I'm just about trying to get my first kiss kind of thing, and this guy is getting European titles left, right and centre, leaving really accomplished runners behind him. And both that 1500 and that 5k he raced, it was just, he just had balls of steel, like unbelievable.
Yeah. I think it is that thing of all younger runners who maybe haven't run in senior championships before, they're kind of fearless in that sense, where they're just like, whatever, I'm going to do my own thing, you can come with me or not, I'm going to do my thing. And it just works. Like, people, they, athletes, when they get into the senior ranks, they almost scare themselves and trick themselves into thinking that they have to sit and wait in the back or sit and wait on the curb. And he's just kind of shown them that you just don't need to do that. You run it how you want to run it and feel comfortable doing it.
He is fearless, but I think he's also quite smart as well. He's a smart tactician. And I'm thinking back to Tampere in the 5K, when he was dropped off the leaders briefly through halfway through the race, but managed to work himself back into medal contention and finished with the silver medal, I think, in that 5K. He's obviously got his older brothers to, mm-hmm. you know, teach him a few things about the senior circuit. But yes, he's fearless, but also don't underestimate his thought processes. I know he loses track of how many laps there are to go.
Yeah. But he didn't know what lap he was on when he won it. That's mental, absolutely mental.
But one other person in that 1500 you have to mention is Lewandowski, because he just came right from behind, and to get that silver medal and really close behind Ingebrigtsen there, I think that just showed again what a competitor he is, what a championship performer he is.
The Polish just know how to do a sprint finish, always. Like, in the way you saw it in the women's 400 meters, 4x4 relays, just
women's 15. Yeah, we saw it in some of the semis and the heats. They just shot just from time and time again. They're just great finishers.
I think as well with that men's 1500 meters, I watched it from, I was fairly high up and I didn't have any monitor or anything in front of me. And at one point, it was three Brits and three Ingebrigtsens at the front, and their kit is pretty much identical from that far away. So I was like, I had no idea who was leading, but it's just this pack of Brits and Ingebrigtsens. It was mental. And a good race from Jake Whiteman as well to get the bronze medal there to cap off a pretty nice season for him, actually.
Yeah, I bumped into him briefly yesterday after the medal ceremonies, and he was made up after the Commonwealth bronze, now another bronze. Mm-hmm. Like, just really nicely progressing.
I'll just correct myself, sorry. Jakub, he got bronze in that under 25K, but he got silver in the 1500 metres.
Behind George Manangoy.
Behind George Manangoy.
Mm-hmm.
Younger brother of Elijah Manangoy.
World champion.
So we'll come on to that shortly. But we also just mentioned Adam Kshot. I'm sorry, Adam, I still haven't learned to pronounce your surname totally properly. But he's... another example of a really fantastic Polish runner. Just through the rounds, through the semis, and in the final, he was just in prime position. And I think if you watch his indoor campaign from earlier this season, where he won the indoor title, I think he was unbeaten as well. He just knew exactly where he needed to be. Almost by the yard. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a reason they call him
the professor, right?
Yeah, that's it. It wasn't necessarily about the time in that race. It was about the timing, you know, because if you kind of look at his season over the last few months, he's not really won too many races. He's not ran blistering times. He's maybe been slightly short of sharp on the Diamond League, but when it comes to competing across three races, he is among the best in the business, it has to be said.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, to be honest, I'll hold my hand up and say I kind of doubted his fitness this season. I wasn't 100% sure whether he would actually win the title, but I'm never in doubt.
Three European titles he's now got outdoors. Mm-hmm. He's got two indoors, I think. He's got like two European under 23s. He's won the European team champs twice. He's won two world indoor silvers.
Won world silver last year outdoor in London.
Behind Boss, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess Doha, Tokyo are going to be big years for him, complete the set. But he was incredibly fantastic. And then also, I want to say a word on the throws, the women's javelin, Michelle, again, like, she, it was her, was it her open throw?
So, Christine Hussong went into that women's javelin qualifying and just in the first round threw a personal best. 67.40 something, I think it was.
Championship record as well.
Just like, out like that. And then packed her bags, went out, comes back in the final, betters it again, just like that. Never in doubt. And I think a lot of people didn't necessarily have her on the cards. I mean, she's been throwing well and things, but I think just... one of those where, because she isn't competing necessarily as much on the Diamond League circuit, not as visible to the international audience. Everybody's always talking about the men's javelin throwers, and of course we had a German double there with Thomas Roller and Andreas Hoffmann, and great performance from the Estonian in thirds. So that was good. But just the way Christine Hossong did that javelin, it was just like, look, I can do this. I know us Germans can throw javelin. Here's something for the crowd. Job done, kind of thing.
Yeah, I think people, you do underestimate the power of a home crowd that I feel like can bring out those kind of performances. We know, we saw it in the men's high jump, women's long jump, and then women's javelin.
And it shows that it's the field events, because they actually build up. Mm-hmm. It's not just being on the track for a short moment. Of course, when you're running, you know that there's a crowd. But I think in the field events, really having round by round by round that support, it does make a big difference.
And yeah, and it's something that doesn't necessarily always come across on television, the drama of field events. Mm-hmm. And I would encourage anyone to get themselves to a stadium if there's ever a major championships taking place near them, and follow a field event, because just another one that springs to mind from this week is the men's discus.
Yeah.
You know, the week after Barry Chuckle died, it was a Tamita U contest. I'm sorry. Don't laugh, a man's died. But yeah, there's been some fantastic field events, and the women's long jump last night was just
women's
tight.
Shot.
The thing
that I really liked there was the fact that actually the way the timetabling worked, there were several times when all eyes were on the field events, and it's not something that we always see, and it just showed that if the crowd is really paying attention to it, if they really get behind it, it works. And when we had the men's discus and the women's shot going on at the same time, and there was in the last round still several changes in leads, it was just fantastic competition, and literally no one cared that Robert Harting didn't get a medal. Got a nice send-off, but it was just an amazing discus throw, and that's what mattered in that sense.
I agree. I think, yeah, in general, like you said, the crowd have just helped hugely. I think, are there any other highlights that you guys would like to mention before we move on? Honourable mentions at all? Oh, Carsten Warholm. Actually, I had to.
Lad.
Yeah, literally. What a guy, like, running 4 hurdles and 400 individual. And did he run a national record again in the hurdles?
Yeah,
yes,
European under 23 record, I think it was. But only by 100th of a second, but it's almost as if every time he races, he chips away at that record. Mm-hmm. And I think we're all looking forward to the Diamond League finals, aren't we?
Oh, yes.
Well, what's nice with him is, because I was speaking with him in London after he won that non-Diamond League 400 hurdles, he said he needed that win. And I think he was right, needed that before the Europeans, mm-hmm. because he's been playing second fiddle to Samba the season. And he said after last year, he admits he might have got a little cocky, he might have got his feet off the ground a bit, and he said, Samba and Rye Benjamin, they've been putting some really heavy shoes on me to put my feet back on the ground, and then to come out, to win that race in London, and then to come out here and to dominate the way he did. And actually, that was a fantastic race, because Capello looked absolutely fantastic as well.
Where did that come from?
So I think, again, it was just great races and great competitions rather than just pure dominance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd agree, yeah. Tom, any more notes from you? Are we done with Euros for now?
Honourable mentions. Everyone who's competed this year. Everyone. Thank you, everyone.
Also, as well, I'm sure there's going to be some wonderful performances tonight, but yeah, unfortunately, because of timings, so heavy, but you'll have to watch it. Anyway, so we kind of touched on it briefly at the start, Tom, but you got the opportunity to catch up with Nicholas Cowell.
Yes, I did. We spent half an hour together the other morning over breakfast. Touched on life, the universe and everything. He's a student now, which I think he said makes things a little bit more easy to manage in terms of his workload. He's closer to a track as well. Mm-hmm. And for him to have come away this week with a personal best in his second decathlon of the year, I don't know, German multi-events are so strong, so it's going to be a battle for him to make the world's team next year. But I think if you put him in a championship mix, he's going to be there or thereabouts. So, Nicholas Cowell, we're here in Berlin after you just finished fourth at the European Championships. Obviously, under 18 world title, under 20 world title, European under 20. Yeah? Any others? Have I missed any others?
No, That's on.
So where do you put that fourth place finish a couple of nights ago in front of your home fans, in front of the Berlin crowd? Where do you rank that alongside your other achievements?
It was a great crowd, I think, and it's a big achievement for me, like the other achievements are. But in front of that home crowd, it was a special feeling. So yeah, it has a special place in my mind right now, and it gives me a lot of motivation for the next years and on the road to the Olympic Games 2020 in Tokyo. So that was a great competition with these other guys.
Let's go through the decathlon a little bit. Where do you think you performed well? Where are the areas that you feel like that maybe you could improve?
Yeah, I think the high jump was on the first day was my best discipline at these whole 2 days with the discus. The discus was a good discipline too, but the javelin went terrible. So I don't know what I did there, but my technique was just all over the place, and yeah. I'm a little bit sad because normally it's my favorite discipline in the decathlon, and you want to show the people how far you can throw, and it didn't work out on Wednesday. So yeah, shit happens, but that's the decathlon.
That is the decathlon, and I remember a couple of years ago when before Bydgoszcz. You said you had a few arm problems. Is there anything like that troubling you at all these days?
No, not these days, but in Götters.
Right.
I had a little bit a little problem with my back and the javelin, so I wasn't able to throw. In so many throws this season, and when you can't throw that much, technique is not that good, and then you with a bit of luck you can hit a really good throw, but normally it goes not so well, so shit happens.
Well, tell me a little bit about that 1500 meter center finish, because it was just incredible when you were kind of pushing at the front and the crowd were responding. Does that give you an extra sense of yes, I can do this? Does it allow you to push through the pain barrier that little bit more?
Yes, for sure. It was the crowd was that loud. I think my ears are bleeding. So, but it was a great feeling when you. It is a great feeling when you know the whole crowd is cheering for you, and that gives you just this last extra kick, I think, and. Yeah, but this was through the whole 2 days, and in the high jump or the pole vault, the whole crowd stand up for me. So that's just an incredible feeling that I never experienced before.
And not just home crowd, but also teammates, with Arthur doing so well, ultimately getting the gold. What's it like competing with your German teammates in that environment, especially given that they're a lot more experienced than you and you were a late addition to the team?
It was great teamwork. I think Arthur and Matthias and me, we are not rivals. We are just friends, which doing the same event, live for the same kind of moments at our sport, and this is the thing why that worked out so good, and I learned just so much from Arthur these whole 2 days, and he's just a great experienced athlete, and after so many injuries he came back and scored a nice and did a nice competition, and so I think it's well deserved that he's the European champion now, and that's great for him, and I'm really happy for him.
Is there any particular piece of advice that he gave you, or is there any particular thing that you will take away from this competition, having competed in that environment?
Not from that competition, but I learned from him to get up after you fall, after you got injured, and that you have to keep fighting all the time after a setback. And I think that is what you really can learn from Arthur.
Mm. And it's not just the German teammates. It's like this decathlon brotherhood, isn't there? Do you feel like, after Götze's earlier on this season, and now after the last couple of days, do you feel like you kind of belong on that senior ranks because you've excelled so well up till this point?
Yeah, yes, I think so. And it's every time great to do a decathlon with all these guys. Mm. And it's... You said it before. It's a special brotherhood that I never experienced in another discipline like javelin throw or something like that. So it's really special, and that's the reason why all the decathletes are going to the Lab of Honor together, and not just the three medal winners, and that's special thing about the decathlon, and that's why it's so much fun.
Is there a little bit of regret in your mind because you were so close to the podium?
No. I didn't lost a medal. I won a third place. So it's really a great feeling for me.
Mm.
1 week ago, I didn't knew I'm going to compete, and then our head coach called me and said, "Hey, pack your bag, and tomorrow you are flying to Berlin, and you're competing next week." And I was like, "What the fuck?" And my heart rate got up from 65 to 125 at this moment. So I was just like, what? And after this preparation, which wasn't a real preparation, to get the fourth place is just amazing.
What were you planning to be doing this week?
I bought tickets for the European Championships, and I wanted to watch the decathlon and the heptathlon, and so. Yeah, that would be a good experience, but to compete in that stadium with that crowd was, yeah, out of this world.
Yeah, you ended up getting the best seat in the house, I think. You know, front row seats, better than front row seats, backside seats.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your training a little bit, because you've just told me that you're a student now. I think when we first met, you were still back in school, so. How has being a student affected your training? Has it made it easier at all, or has kind of studies become even more intense? Because I think you study physics.
Yeah, I think it's better for me to be a student now, because the university is near my training spot, and
which university is it?
Johannes Gutenberg University in Mainz.
In Mainz. And you're from Mainz?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and so the ways from the university to my training spot is the ways not so long, and that's better than the years before when I was in school and have to drive 10 kilometers from my school to my training spot. So
right.
It's good to be a student now.
So it's more convenient. But what about studies? Is that putting any pressure on your time at all?
Oh, I don't think so, because in university you can, feel a bit more free. So you can do how much you want in that. In that year, and next year when you are a little injured or something like that, you can do a little bit more, and that's better than in school, where you have to learn all all things in the same time as the others do.
How did you end up doing decathlon? Because I know you as a good javelin thrower. Was that always your specialist event, or did you always do all 10?
I always did all 10 because when I started with track and field, you do everything. You do running, long jump, and throwing, and that was so much fun that I hold on to it until now, and that's the point why I do the decathlon. And my first German championships in decathlon were in 2012, and after that I said I don't want to do a special event. I want to do the decathlon for my whole career, because this brotherhood between the athletes was so good, and it was a great feeling to competing with these guys, and yeah, that's why I do the decathlon.
All the same, do you have a favorite event?
Yeah, it's definitely the javelin throw.
Yeah,
but after this competition, the high jump is one of my favorites too.
Yeah, Well, that's what I remember from Cali. Is your high jump competition, actually, because you had this crazy run of first time clearances up to something like, was it 210?
205.
205.
205 it was. Nine clearances at the first attempt until 205.
Which was just like a crazy PB.
Yeah.
So do, is it something about the championship atmosphere that kind of pushes you to, I don't know, do so well in the high jump?
Yeah, the atmosphere the crowd behind me, that is a big help in the high jump, and then you can jump really high, like 205 in Cali or 210 in Bydgoszcz or 208 in Berlin, and there the crowd helps me a lot.
And on the back of Cali, of course, you were invited to train with Ashton Eaton before the World Indoor Championships in 2016. How do you look back on that now, 2 years on? Because I've seen you since then, but you've developed a lot since then. What was your main takeaway from that? And what kind of lives with you to this day?
Yeah, it was great to see how a world-class athlete like Ashton Eaton trains before a big competition, or prepares for a big competition like the World Indoor Championships, and he was and there are small advices from him that helped me a lot in Bydgoszcz or in Crozeto last year, and even in Berlin, and that you have to keep I don't know how to say it. You have to relax, and that is the main point that I took away from this experience with Ashton, and it was nice to see.
You say you've got to relax. I think we all know that about athletics. You know, whether you're a sprinter, a thrower, a jumper, the most important thing is to be relaxed. But did you get nervous at all over the last couple of days?
Yeah, I was nervous, but after, when I'm going to the warm-up track and I put my headphones on and started the music, at this moment, I'm only concentrating on my competition, and after that, I'm not that nervous.
Right.
But I don't know why. Also, after the competition, I thought, why you were not that nervous with that crowd?
Sorry to interrupt you. Could you do us a favor? We have a meeting only in this place every time in the morning. Could you do us a favor and sit over there? Is it approximately? Only 4 minutes. Sorry, I will not interrupt you. Sorry, sir. Yeah, sorry.
We'll be done in 5 minutes. Is that okay?
We have
right now.
Sorry, is it okay?
Yeah, I was told that we could do an interview here. That's all.
Okay.
Okay, let's move.
Maybe over there?
Yeah.
Everywhere you want.
Sure.
Because we are 10 people.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
yes.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you.
Rules and regulations. Do you ever get nervous before exams, school exams, or anything?
Yeah, they're a little bit. And before the 1500 and 400.
Really?
Yeah. It's not that much fun, especially for the cafe.
What's your PB in the 15 now?
4:15:52.
Okay.
From last year in Crozetto, where I had to run 4:22 to break that world under 20 record, and there I ran my PB.
Do you work on your 15 time that much, or is that kind of something that naturally drops as your aerobic base improves?
No, we worked on that a lot. The last years, because my coaches and I are thinking that when you can run the 1500 good, it's good for your regeneration.
Mm.
Between day one and day two.
Mm.
So we worked on that a little bit. So.
Okay, so just all round endurance, I guess the 15 comes in handy. What is it like to wake up on day two of a decathlon?
It's not that good. Everything hurts, and you, yeah. I went to bed at 1 o'clock, and we had to wake up at I think 5:45. So it's not that long. And everything hurts, and you are not you think you are not going to finish the second day, but after you got up and eat a little bit, then everything's gonna be all right for the second day.
What's it like waking up the day after day two? Because you told me that you did a little bit of partying the last couple of the nights.
Yeah, we had only, I think, 3 hours of sleep in that night, and after that we had to go to the German television.
Right.
And I waked up, and my muscles were so sore, and but it's a good kind of pain, I mm-hmm. think, because mm-hmm. you know, now it's done, and you are happy with the performance over the last 2 days, and I think that is why it's just a good kind of pain.
Why do you think Germans are so good in decathlon and multi events in general?
Yeah, I think when there are some guys and the senior level that are real world class athletes, then you have in the junior ranks so many people that I look up to these athletes and want to do the same. So I think it's because of that, and yeah.
Is there anyone in particular that you looked up to when you were growing up?
Yeah, there were many decathletes, I think, and in Germany it was Michael Schrader, and for sure Ashton when you look at the world stage.
What are your plans now for the rest of the year? Is athletics can take a little break now, because how many decathlons have you done this year?
Just two.
Just two. So
it's okay, but my season is over now, and I can rest a little bit, but not that long. I think we are starting to train again at 1st of September.
Okay.
And so just a little break, but the first weeks of training are just strength, jumps, and running, so no specific technique. So that's easy, and a nice training.
Are you going to go on holiday?
Yes, 1 week or 10 days, I think.
Where are you going to go?
Croatia.
Croatia?
Croatia with some friends and just relax and, yeah, then concentrate back on track and field, because I'm now, after this competition, I'm motivated for the next years and hope that it's going that well.
I think you're one of a few Germans who's kind of announced themselves to the public the last few days. I think Gina Lückenkämper, for instance. What's it like to be part of that generation? Does it feel like a generation, or does it just kind of feel like, oh well, you're doing your own thing?
Yeah, it's a bit of a generation now from these young guys that are growing up in the moment and growing up to like world class athletes like Gina is doing at the moment, and it's a good feeling to are part of that that new athlete generation. But what we can learn from the older, I said older generation. Sorry,
the experienced.
Sorry, Arthur. but there are many things we can learn from these older athletes and more experienced athletes. So it's good to have that little mix between the young generation and the experienced guys.
And did you watch the javelin final last night?
Yeah.
Did you enjoy that as a javelin thrower yourself?
Yes. It was a good final. I hoped for some 90-meter throws, but it was good that the Germans took silver and the gold medal. Shit happens for Johannes, but hey, you cannot win every time. So I think he's going to be back in good shape next year and even in 2020. So that's going to be a nice competition in the next years between these guys.
And for you, next year, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I don't really know yet, but I think there. I saw the last days. I saw there is so many things that I can improve in my decathlon. So I want to do. I want to focus on that in the winter, and then we'll see. I think I'm going to do the European Under 23 Championships next year, and yeah, we have so many good decathletes in Germany, so it's going to be a close battle between these old guys to qualify for the world championships, and but I think that's my goal for the next season.
Well, I wish you all the best of luck, Nicholas.
Thanks.
Congratulations. A pleasure, as always.
Thanks.
Okay there, guys, so obviously the European Champs have been amazing, but there was also, the week before, the African Championships in Asaba, Nigeria, and I think there was kind of some problems initially because there were, to be fair, last minute hosts to the championships, so fair play for stepping up and putting on a continental championships of athletics. Amazing for them to do that so last minute, but there was also some pretty good performances there too.
Yeah, but just before we talk about the performances, we waxed about the crowds in Berlin. I think we just need to mention the crowds in Asaba as well, because they packed that stadium out every single session.
And I think it just shows that there's such huge hunger for athletics in Africa, because last year at the World Under-18s in Nairobi, I mean, they just packed that stadium every night. And watching Asaba on the live stream that they provided, it was just packed. They were dancing in the stands. They were having a great time. They were obviously very much supporting the Nigerian athletes. But in general, there was just good crowd support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really lovely to see. And I think just the general atmosphere. Like you said, the hunger for athletics in Africa is evident. And, you know, the IAAF have awarded the World Under 20s to Nairobi again for 2020, so it's going to be great to be able to go back there as an IAAF event as well. But yeah, in terms of the performances, what would you guys say? Is there any particular performance that jumped out at you?
Speaking of jumping, say the long jump.
Nice, cute, yeah.
I think everyone kind of, having looked at the season, had their money on Luvu Manyonga. I mean, Rusmal Samai has been improving gradually over the season, but it was very much Luvu Manyonga's to lose.
Yeah.
And that competition turned into a real battle. One of our colleagues, Bob, he was out there and he said it's one of the best long jump competitions he's ever seen. Mm-hmm. And so really, Rusmal Samai winning by 2 centimetres, beating the world champion Luvu Manyonga, and the two compatriots there just pushing each other on in distances. I just think, it, again, going back to how exciting field events is, especially in Africa where often the track dominates, just shows what an exciting future we have in the sport across the board in disciplines.
Yeah. I really hope as well this loss pushes Luvo on, because he's obviously lost the World Indoor title to Echeverria, and now he's lost the African Champs title. And I think we're in for a treat in Manthong Jump come 2019 if all of these guys stay fit and healthy. It's such an amazing event filled with such depth at the moment. And I think as well as the men's, I think, surprisingly, Essie Broom in the women's, she actually jumped 6.83, which would have won the Europeans here as well. So pretty huge jump from her as well.
I think it was her third consecutive African title as well.
Really?
Yeah, so wow. she's really got a championship pedigree. And you're right, because we can talk about the two major guys in the men's long jump. And perhaps on the women's side they get a bit less, you know, attention shown on them, but yeah, 6.83, that is a mark not to be sniffed at.
And of course the crowd loved it because she's from Nigeria, so again, going back to the support that a home crowd can do for an athlete in a field event, just evident there again.
Yeah, as well, we also touched on it for the Europeans, but we saw two doubles in the women's sprints as well. So we saw Talu do 100, 200, and Casta do 400, 800. Not really a sprint, but turning into one when Casta's minute is about. Jesus. I mean, Casta, let's start with Casta, because she did 156.06. That's mental. And then to go on, do that, and then go sub-50 for 400 metres. I think she was originally going to do the 1500 as well.
Yeah.
She decided that was maybe a bit too much, so fair enough. But sub-50, 400, did you ever think Casta could do that?
I think we probably all thought that she was capable of it, but for someone who kind of focuses more on middle distance events, the 400 is a technical event. If anyone's ever ran it, you know, you've got to come out the blocks fast, but you've also got a curve to deal with. And it's quite easy to criticise athletes who make lane infringements on the 400 metres. It's actually quite difficult when you're doing it at full pelt. So, yes, very impressive. Given that she's focused more on the 15 this year in terms of a second event, very, very impressive to run such an incredible time.
And you mentioned the blocks there, because in the past she's always said, like, she's not a sprinter, so she's not really used to going out the blocks. And in
That's
the 400,
true,
you really have to go out the blocks. So for her to do that and to have a decent start, because otherwise you can't run sub 50, clearly she's been working on that as well. Maybe getting a bit of speed work advice from Akani Simbine, another South African who won the 100 metre title.
Yeah, I think for her, you always see when Casta does run a 400, she does take a while to get going, but almost like shippers. When she finally gets up to her top speed, she's just not slowing down. Like, she just kind of continues and maintains it, and she just ran down the rest of the field. It was, yeah, an incredible race. Any other moments from the African Championships for you guys?
We should mention Talu, shouldn't we? Because it's, and again, another incredible double. I think she's been more prominent on the global stage compared to someone like Dina Rasha-Smith, who's perhaps more emerging. But Talu, after coming so close in championships in the past, to have notched a double in the one and the two is very rewarding. She's had a terrific season, to be fair to her. She held the world lead 10.85 over the 100,
which is now being tied. Until this championships happened, was probably the best sprinter in the world. And I think they're now probably on the palm. I'd probably say Dina over the 200, but in over 100 metres, I have no idea who would win the race between Talu and Asha Smith.
Well, hopefully we'll find out at the Continental Cup.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Dina, actually, I remember in the mix zone we chatted afterwards, and she was buzzing for the Continental Cup. She said it's something that it's the best I've never gotten. It's almost like the pinnacle of what you could do within sport, represent a continent. because there's nothing really above that, unless I guess you're representing
the planet.
The intergalactic game. Next up.
Yeah. It's a bit of Space Jam going on.
Yeah. Other events. Beatrice Chepkowicz, of course. Steeplechase boss.
Oh, yes.
Champion in age 59.88, ninth fastest run of all time. One of the fastest unpaced performances ever. So everyone always complains about pacers, and of course they help, but she can run fast by herself.
Yeah, she is incredible. I mean, we have to talk about that Monaco performance that she did, because I was in the stadium that night, and I was in the mix zone, and people were just kind of, we were just getting words and feeding into it, that, oh, she's actually going to smash the world record here by about 10-15 seconds.
Well, yeah, Michelle and I were in London in the lobby, and there was something of a Diamond League party going on in the Meet Hotel. But I was trying to calculate what she was, you know, on to run, and I just kept thinking, no, I can't quite have got that right. I can't have got that right, because when anyone goes sub 9, you kind of want to double check your figures. But she absolutely obliterated that world record.
But it was so funny, because you mentioned that the company we were in, it was just a very random group of us just watching. There was a lot of the managers, there was a lot of other athletes, there was a lot of people who had nothing to do with the Diamond League meet that was the following day. And as people were realising how fast she was going, it kind of, one group went quiet, the other group went loud. So there were these two emotions, because everyone was like, hang on a second, she's really absolutely smashing that record. And Courtney Freerich in that race as well was insane.
Yeah, I mean, I spoke to her in the mix zone afterwards, and she thought at one point she was leading, because Chepkowicz was that far ahead. Like, that is mental. And Courtney Freerich, like, She broke the area record, didn't she?
Yeah.
She beat Emma Coburn. Like, she's run faster now than Emma Coburn has ever run in her life.
And Emma Coburn is a boss.
Yeah.
So that's, I'd love to see the two of them go head to head soon again.
Continental
as well.
Cup, though. Like, again, because now, is it, and she mentioned two athletes per.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, potentially it'd be great to see Courtney at the Continental Cup, because I think she also mentioned that she plans to compete in Ostrava as well. So that's going to be quite some event. I think you guys touched on the London Diamond League briefly there. Would you say was your, because you were both there, what was your favourite moment from the London Diamond League?
Oh, career.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
For me, we were sat next to each other, Michelle and I, and my head was falling off. And just to kind of bring it back to the African Championships, to see him go up against Nigel Amos, who'd ran so well the previous night two nights previous in Monaco.
What a weekend for 800 metre running.
What a weekend for 800 metre running, and then what a championships, African Championships for 800 metre running, mm-hmm. as well, because I thought maybe career had the edge there, but I think Amos just showed a bit more resilience through the rounds.
Maybe also just the experience. Corey is still super young, still kind of learning his ropes. I think half the time he doesn't realise what he's doing. We were speaking with his manager, Karen, and she was saying that one time he only told her afterwards that he ran a 400 metres and absolutely bossed it. So he's just this inexperienced guy, but he's just doing his own thing and absolutely smashing one record after another.
Yeah, how old is career?
22, 23. Yeah, Michelle's frantically Googling it now. The other thing I'll say about him as well, and this is, again, intel from the agent, is he doesn't like to eat eight hours before a race.
What?
So I don't know if there's any nutritionists who are keen listeners to the podcast, but if you could tell us if that's a good thing, do you race on an empty stomach, or, you know, does that give you more hunger? You see what I've done there? But, you know, or maybe people just have a preference. I know I don't like to eat too much before a run, because it comes out. But yeah, it's maybe with a bit more nutrition help as well, and he runs in 10,000 metre spikes. There's a lot to come from young Emmanuel.
Just to confirm, he's 23 years.
23.
Yeah.
The thing is that we say Nigel Amos, we think of him as like the old man of the 800 now. He's 24. Mm. He won that silver medal in London at age 18, and 24 years of age, like, they're both, if that's anything to go by, I mean,
it can be around for another 6-7 years easily.
Yeah, both in their prime. That's Doha, Tokyo. I'm ready for that. Challenging the likes of Boss, Schott, and, you know, the other Europeans, it's going to be, and the Americans as well, like, it's going to be super exciting for the next global championships.
Yeah, just someone like Clayton Murphy springs to mind. If we get all these guys in a fast race, and we've seen them all in a fast race, but I think now they're all pretty credentialed, you know, they had reputations. Someone like Amos, obviously, Olympic silver medal, it's, mm-hmm. you know, that's a serious credential, but yeah, it's an exciting time for the 800 metre runners.
Another exciting event for me at the moment is the women's 400 metres. Only because we've got this like, we've got this new rivalry building up between Sarah Eden Nasser and Shaunae Miller-Weibo. Because Nasser, she was great as a junior athlete. She did some great accolades.
You saw her in Cali.
Yeah, yeah.
When she was still wearing her headscarf.
Yeah, world youth champion back in Cali.
Wow.
Way back when, yeah.
That was 2015.
Yeah. So someone like Sarah is someone, if you see an athlete perform well young, you kind of follow their career. But she's so small.
She's tiny.
It's something that a friend of mine actually pointed out from watching the two of them race in Monaco.
Because
Shaunae is so tall, you know, this kind of, yeah, this I don't know. For me, Shaunae Miller and Nafi Tiam just look like such well-sculpted athletes.
Yeah.
And Nasser doesn't almost look like a 400 metre runner, you know.
No. She could be a sprinter, like 100. She looks like a 100 metre sprinter to me. And to run a 400 and really run next to someone who's basically got legs up to like your chest and challenge them. I don't know how you do it. She just must have frequency. I don't know how she does it.
Now, I know this isn't a fashion podcast, but I just want to say that I love Shaunae Miller's split shorts as well. I think that's a great look. That's all.
Nasser actually said in the Monaco Dominique press conference that her mother was a 200 metre sprinter and she's actually got a faster personal best than Sarah right now. So her mum's like, you need to run more 200s because I want to see you beat my best.
I'd actually love to see her over a 200. I don't think I've ever seen her run a 200. I mean, she's, as you said, she's got personal best, but I would love her and Shaunae also to go up next to against each other.
Maybe Continental Cup if she does it for Asia Pacific. So yeah, could be exciting with Dina Archer-Smith, Shaunae Miller-Weibo. That could be
Talu. Oh my god!
Oh wow! Wow! Oh yeah, my god! I think as well, maybe for the future, this one is for Doha and Tokyo. If Sydney McLaughlin decides to do 4 hurdles and 400 again, if somebody can challenge these ladies over the 400 meters, I guess. A word to be said, oh my god, I think she's had an amazing year. She's just on another level of, like, how old is she now? 18 still? Michelle's back on the map again.
She's another Cali champion as well. I remember seeing her win that 4 hurdles race in Cali by just an incredible amount of distance. You could see her talent right then. I love the way this season as well, she just did a mic drop after the NCAAs. Yeah. So that'll do.
She's actually, I do remember just seeing that it was her birthday recently, so she's literally just turned 19.
Okay.
So, I mean, freaking 19 years old and just dominates. She's still the world leader in the women's 4 hurdles, so, I mean.
Yeah, what an athlete. I think, again, one thing that I would say was a shame about the Euros, but also the event in general for the women's high jump, because somebody who did really well in London, Elena
Velotigara.
Her name is so difficult to kind of get your tongue around.
She was so fantastic in London because I was sitting down the night before and having quite a long conversation with her, and we were talking about how she was this season finally getting things together. The last time she's worn an Italian international vest was in 2010 in Moncton at the World Juniors.
Oh my god.
So she's really had a few seasons of tons of injuries, really struggled. She said she studies psychology, so she says she sometimes just overanalyzes things, and obviously in the high jump that really plays into it. Completely reset everything last year and now really finding into form. She bettered her PB from 196 to 202 in London.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a shame to see her not perform up to that standard here, but she was also being really realistic about it and said, I've not competed in a championships environment since 2010. I've been getting used to the Diamond League circuit. I've been jumping in some jumps only meets, but jumping in championships, having a qualifying round and then that final is different, and it's just mentally challenging. But she'll come out and she'll compete in more Diamond Leagues this season, and I think she won't be done yet because she'll be hungry after that, and she was clearly disappointed. But that jump for me in London was one of the best performances of that day. Mariella Sitzkina, of course, just dominating her way through.
Mm-hmm.
But But that for me was just showing that there are some athletes, you don't always have to perform straight out from the junior ranks. You can come back even, I mean, she's not old, she's 26 years old, so there's still plenty of time for her to really show that that 202 wasn't just an accident.
Yeah, it would be great to see her potentially, I'm sure she would have qualified now for the Diamond League finals.
She did, because she needed one more point to qualify in London, and obviously she finished second there, so she's through to the final.
And Mirella Demirova as well has gone over 2 meters this season.
Oh my god, balls of steel, that woman, wow. And we forgot to mention,
it was funny because my co-commentator Phil, he was saying with her just having one more attempt after she passed several heights, he was like, I think that was a gamble too far, that's it for her. And then she just goes out there and just clears it in her third attempt and just goes on and says, told you so, I know exactly what I'm doing.
And she's the only woman to have beat Lasitskini. And well, actually, there was a couple who finished ahead of her in Rabat, but she won in Rabat to bring Lasitskini's run to an end.
45 comps, I think, unbeaten for Lasitskina. An end now.
Well, she's back on top now because she obviously won this title here in Berlin.
But of course, the great thing with the Diamond League is that it's basically a championship style final, because it doesn't matter who's performed how during the season, and anyone can win. And as we've seen, some of these athletes that have been dominating this entire season are beatable, and actually it just makes those finals that are coming up very soon really exciting.
Yeah, we've only got actually one more Diamond League left now. We've got Birmingham coming up this weekend, and then after that is just
two finals.
Yeah, Zurich and Brussels. So I'll be in Zurich with Tom.
I'll be in Brussels.
Yeah, and it's both going to be back-to-back meets. It's going to be pretty amazing, and then after that I think it'll be the Continental Cup. So we've got loads coming up in next week's podcast, but I think that's just about everything. Have you guys got anything else on your mind?
No, I just want to get to the stadium now and watch the final session because
me too. What are you most excited for? What are your, give me a prediction for the final session.
Dina to get a third gold, I think
that's
4x1.
Yeah,
I think it's obviously dependent on what our teammates can do, but They got silver at the Worlds last year. So
the Brits,
men's pole vault, super excited because there's so many young guys in this final. There's been quite some upsets with some of the more experienced athletes being knocked out in the qualifying. No Rafael Holstepper, no Kulitska, no defending champion. And it really is the youngsters versus the old guard. We've got Laviel Nee, who's been taped up. He struggled a bit in Rabat, but looked really good in qualifying. The two poles, Lisek and Wojciechowski, looked
Lisek
amazing.
Of course, I think. But yeah, that's going to be an amazing, amazing final. And then also Laura Muir coming up as well. I don't think anybody's going to get past her. For me, I mean, I could literally have jinxed her right here, right now. You can all laugh at me, but
I think by the time this comes out, you might all have egg on your faces, which is why I'm there. Myself a little bit quieter.
Okay, well, I think that's just about everything. But yeah, Michelle and Tom, thank you very much for chatting to me.
Thomas.
Whatever. Right, anyway, so thank you very much for listening, guys. Where can they find you if they wish to follow you both on social media? Michelle?
At Michelle Samed. With two M's and just E-T, no R in there.
And Tom?
You got to write me a letter, but I'm not giving my postcode out live on it.
Okay, and yeah, you can find me at _BenHarlow on Twitter. But yeah, that's everything for this week's episode, and I hope you guys enjoyed it. Do leave us a review, rate us, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, I think that's everything. So yeah, see you later, guys. Bye.
Ciao.
Bye.
Awfully deep.
Bye.
You started it.
It's just like, mama.